Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast that we are now going to be calling Hammurabi Hangout. Yes, I'm a fan of alliteration.
I suggested that we try to work one more H in there, like, hey, Hammurabi Hangout, and then we could be Triple H, which was less funny the first time I said it. Well, I don't know. It wasn't very funny that time either.
Handsome.
Hi.
So, yes, Hammurabi Hangout. I hope everyone had a relaxing, maybe.
A happy Christmas. Holiday.
Happy holiday, as the song says. We had a good time, except for one day-long bout of homesickness on my part, for which I apologize because, God bless him, Josh bears the brunt of my bad moods when I have bad moods. And he bears them with good grace and love and affection. So, sorry, honey.
I don't know that you have bad moods.
That is really sweet.
I think it's like you can be super amazing or just really amazing.
You are very sweet.
I am. I speak the truth and lie not. My conscience also bearing me witness.
What?
I'm just quoting Paul. Sorry.
Okay. You quote everything and I very rarely understand what's going on.
I know I spent like 2 minutes last night quoting. I'm just going to do it for them. There you go. Now, he used this winged membrane to fly high over predators. Ah! Ah! And you gotta remember, that was back in the Cretaceous period. And as far as periods go, it was a mother. Where is all this going, Mr. Furpo? Oh, skipping. Much like my prehistoric ancestor. I will take flight, soaring high over my problems, never to return. And that's it. Well, that was a very moving story, Mr. Furpo. But the prison psychiatrist says you're incapable of telling the truth. Well, that's a lie. Okay, I'm done. I apologize profusely.
But he quoted all of that as we were going upstairs to get ready for bed. And I've only seen this movie once, several years ago. I knew he was quoting something, but I had no idea what it was.
Yeah, the problem is I do it with no context and completely out of the blue. I'll just, you know, be walking up the steps and I'll start quoting something.
Yep. Which,
I'd like to say it's part of my charm, but I think it's one more thing that you have to put up with.
I don't think so. I enjoy your quotes. Oh. Anyway, we should give these people something of substance.
I'm sure we've got a lot of substance.
Sorry. I meant substance related to the channel.
Well, I've got some substance.
I'm glad you do, because I am drawing a blank. Go for it, my love.
So I made a decision last week, I think, or maybe this week. It was in the past, recently, that I really want to do Volume 3 of the Atheist Handbook right. I want to do it very, very well.
You don't want to half-ass it like Volumes 1 and 2. I love you. I want to make it clear that I didn't think Volumes 1 and 2 were half-assed.
I just... So, all right, it's absolutely true, obviously, that like topics like the Exodus or... trying to think of what other like, yeah, adultery and rape in the Hebrew Bible, like these types of topics obviously are very meaty topics that require a lot of research. The thing is, I'm trying to think of something that I've written about in the first two volumes that's like actually debated in academic circles. Like, the main point that I was trying to make, is it debated? And I just can't think of anything. Like, slavery in the Hebrew Bible. Like, the thing that I'm saying is it was bad. Like, it was the real kind of slavery that was bad. Yeah, nobody's debating that. It's only apologists that are doing that. So, while obviously I could spend, and slavery, I guess I have years researching down to, into all the details and everyone's positions and all those things, it's not really necessary in a volume like that. Because it's not like there are 12 different positions that good scholars are on, that good scholars hold. Does that make sense?
It does.
However, some of the topics that I'm going to be talking about in volume three are actually kind of complicated. And I think it's really important for everybody to know those details or to have access to them at least. And I know I talked about this in the past a little bit. God, my memory is so bad, Megan, if I've already said all of this in a previous podcast. Even though that was a proleptic use of Hammurabi Hangout.
Sorry, you dropped out
Did you?
for a couple of seconds.
Oh, I said, I'm really sorry if, stop me if I've said any of this before in a previous Hammurabi Hangout. And then I said, that's obviously a proleptic use of Hammurabi Hangout. Come on, somebody.
You're amazing.
Am I there? So I started reading Conrad Schmidt's book on Genesis and the Moses story. I guess the title, I always forget specific titles of books, which is terrible. Because I'm looking at the inside of the book when I read it, not the cover, right? Like, why would I? Anyway. And, Schmidt's obviously got a nuanced view of the formation of the Pentateuch. And just to sort of recap for everybody, two of the main views that scholars hold that contrast, and these are good scholars on either side, right? Would be somebody like Joel Baden would say, you have earlier on. One complete, mostly complete, whatever story that runs from Genesis through Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, obviously this is complicated, but like it runs Genesis to Numbers as a single source, as a single story, one account, right? So it has the primeval history, Genesis 1 through 11, maybe not one, but that section, much of that section, it's got the patriarchal narratives, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Joseph. It's got the Exodus, Moses, wilderness, wandering, Sinai, all that stuff. It's got all of it as a single story. and then written down from early on. And then you have another tradition. Another story written down that covers essentially the same story, but with different, slightly different details. And then you have a third source that covers, again, much of the same narrative, different details, different emphases. And so you have these you have these three, ultimately four different sources, these four different stories that at the end, you know, chronologically speaking, an editor, a redactor, a compiler, you know, depending on how one views that, Joel Baden sees this as like essentially a compiler that sits down with these four independent sources and says, okay, I want to put all these together. It would be very much like if somebody today tried to sit down with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John for like a, not a children's book, but like, you know, you wanted to write the story of Jesus. And you couldn't have four different stories. You had to just make one. How would you combine, particularly the synoptic gospels? How would you do that? And so that's what they did. So you've got these, you've got Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you've got JEDMP sitting there in front of you, and you say, how do I combine these into one story? That's essentially what the view is.
You cut them into small pieces, then you sellotape them together again.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Well, that's essentially
I added something useful.
That was good. I mean, that's essentially what, you know, Joel Baden is arguing, that this compiler is not like a creative force. He's not a, you know, creative agent in this, in that sense. What he's doing is he's saying, okay, I've got J, I've got E, I've got P, you know, through most of like the story, they're all covering a lot of the same stuff. So like in the Joseph story in Genesis 37, like, how do I put these together? Well, I follow like the chronology of the story, and I say, okay, here's Joseph arriving, and Jay, or I can't remember what two sources are in.
I call them Dwight.
Dwight. So here's source one. You know, it's got Joseph arriving to his brothers, and then it moves into like them plotting to kill him. So I stop there, and then I take the other source two, and I put in Joseph, that the section that has Joseph arriving right after it, right? And then I go back to source one and pick it up where the brothers scheme. And then I stop at the end of the brothers scheming, and I go back to source two and I put in that section of the brothers scheming. And it ends up having all these doublets, right? You know, the brothers deciding to you know, do something bad to Joseph twice, the Joseph arriving twice, Joseph going down to Egypt twice. So that's the first view. Sorry, this is probably all kind of boring.
Very interesting.
I think it's really important to understand, because it took me so long to wrap my head around the specifics. And the problem is the apologists don't understand the specifics. And so when they make these arguments, they're arguing from generalities. And if you don't understand the specifics, they can sound very convincing. They don't really understand the specifics, so they're setting up straw men. Anyway, so another prominent view is that you don't have, from like earlier on, these full stories in written form. Instead, what you have are independent blocks of stories. Let me be clear. In the first, you know, like Joel Baden's version, they call it the documentary hypothesis, or the neo-documentary hypothesis. You have these full stories that have creation, you know, Tower of Babel, flood, all that stuff, patriarchs, Exodus, wanderings, all in one story from early on written down. In this other view, you don't have these full stories written down from early on. Instead, sorry. What you have are like the story of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, developing on their own, on its own, as like a single block, independent of the Moses story and the Exodus, right? So they're developing chronologically, side by side, but not together. So you don't have this full story, and then this other full story, and then this other full story that in the end are brought together. Instead, you have the patriarchs developing as a story by itself, being edited and added to or whatever. And then you have the Exodus story with Moses developing by itself. And then later on, chronologically speaking, in the exile, in the post-exile, whatever, or in the early like right at the, just before the exile, you know, it just depends. You have an editor, a creative editor with his own motives and theology and all this stuff, taking these two independent stories that are not like duplicates, or they're not like, they're not covering the same thing. One is talking about the origins of Israel in the land of Canaan with the patriarchs, right? And then this other story, which has the origins of Israel down in Egypt. And he's saying, all right, well, these are two different origin stories. One has our father Abraham, who comes, you know, he's coming from Canaan. That's where he's at. He's wandering around Canaan, and he has a son, Isaac, and he has a son, Jacob, and they're all in Canaan. That's the origin of Israel. But then I've got this other story that's been developing that says that actually we were all down in Egypt in the beginning. And God rescued us as a people from slavery and brought us into Canaan from there. Well, how... These are two important origin stories. How do I connect them? Like, how do I make them both true, right? And so the editor, the redactor, says, aha, I will make them one story. And I will say, originally, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the fathers, they were all in Canaan. But then somehow we got down to Egypt and became slaves. How do I do that? How do I make that transition? Ah, Joseph, right? You know, so, you know, Joseph gets sold into slavery and he goes down, and then all the other patriarchs come down. In other words, there are these connections. So if you read through, for example, one of the things that he points out, again, nothing new, is that you have three generations, like three, you have, let's see if I can remember it. There's Levi, you know, one of the sons of Jacob. And then Levi has a son, Amram. I can't remember. He has a son, and he has another son, and that son today has a grandson. And like, it ends up being that Moses is born to, I think, the grandson of Levi. And I did the math. I actually like sat down and tried to plot it out. And even if you have Levi's son and grandson, like having their kids at like 100 years old, you still don't come close to the 430 years that goes between, you know, Jacob and Israel going down into Egypt, and for Jacob and the rest of the patriarchs going down into Egypt, and then Moses talking to Pharaoh 430 years later. Just like the math doesn't work, right? Anyway, so these are signs that, like, these two traditions, these two stories, the patriarch story and the Exodus story, were not originally connected. They're originally independent. And a later editor, a later redactor is coming up and saying, how do I tie these two together in the same way, or at least in a similar way to, you know, if we have the Sumerian stories about Gilgamesh. We've got one about Gilgamesh and Huwawa. So Enkidu and Gilgamesh go out and kill Huwawa out in the cedar forest. And then you've got a story about Gilgamesh and Inanna and the Bull of Heaven. How would we tie these two stories together? Well, as Sin Lake Unity did, like, oh, well, we got him out, like, fighting Huwawa and killing him. And then as they come back into Uruk, Ishtar and Inanna makes a proposal of marriage, right? And that connects these two stories, these two independent stories. So then the question would be like, well, if we've got the story of Gilgamesh and Aga, you know, where, you know, you've got Aga you've got this guy that gets, like, captured, and he says, if that were my king, it's been a while since I've read it, but, like, if that were my king, you would have known, essentially.
Yeah, his origin sort of overwhelmed you. Yeah, or right,
the lapis lazuli beard or whatever. And how would we connect that story? Well, maybe, if we had to add that on to the Gilgamesh epic, maybe, like, in the beginning, we've got Gilgamesh, he has this scene where as he's up on top of the wall, you know, looking out and deciding to go on an expedition to the Cedar Forest to make a name for himself, maybe Aga comes, you know, like we would add that in. We would make this insertion and then put these little, what, you know, they're thought of as like mortar verses or mortar passages that can, you know, that are used to connect these two blocks and make a transition. Anyway, so then you get this continuous story that has its own theological bent. The editor, the redactor, is a creative agent. He's a creative force. He's putting his own theology into it. And then after you have, then I'll shut up after this, after you have this, mortared together story of the patriarchs and the Exodus, for example, and it's got its own theological thing, a later redactor with that now combined story says, actually, I want to, things have happened since then, since it was combined. Not that he's thinking that, but like, I need to explain this new thing that's happened historically. And so I'm going to put my own editorial layer on this now combined thing and redact it myself. So he goes through the story and maybe he wants to explain why we've been taken into exile, right? Why have we been, or why have we been released from exile or whatever? And he goes through and adds his own little throughout the story verses that make it make sense overall, to explain this new thing that he's adding to it. So in other words, big picture, I'll be quiet. Either you have in these two versions, of how the Pentateuch was formed, one view says we have independent full stories from early on written down, and they get woven together at the end. Or you have independent blocks of individual stories that are not duplicated, that are developing on their own. And later on, they are being edited together by a creative person to create this continuous narrative, and then they get re-edited to give a theological. Anyway, the point is, it's very complicated, right? And understanding all the different positions that scholars hold, good scholars hold, is complicated. So my decision, God, this was so long-winded. I'm so sorry. My decision is I'm going to take my time with volume three. And I really want to understand in great detail these different positions so that I can not only lay out a good, clear, understandable history of research. You know, here's where we've gone from like people like Julius Wellhausen and DeVeda and early on, all the way down to, again, people like Joel Baden, Conrad Schmidt, Brooke Schwartz, these people. But then to say, like, here are their individual positions. Here's where they're the same. Here's where they're different. Here's why they hold all these positions. Here are the problems with their positions. Yeah, so that you can understand them. And when an apologist says, oh, yeah, you know, document hypothesis is just stupid because they say, oh, well, this different vocabulary word is used in J, and so if you see it in E, it's, well, that can't be right because it's a different vocabulary. Yet nobody says that.
I say that.
Yeah, you say it. I do too.
I'm wrong, though.
We're all wrong. Okay, I'm going to be quiet.
No, this is good. This is exactly the place to be talking about work in progress and why you're doing something the way you are.
You're very sweet.
You're very sweet. I like your face.
Hmm.
I don't have an awful lot going on at the moment. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, sorry. You meant...
No, I mean like...
specifically work-related.
Yeah, specifically work-related.
We should
children
talk about...
are all off school until the 2nd, so everything's on a bit of a break until then.
It sounded like you said children are in law school until January. You should tell them about your class.
I don't have anything to tell them. Unless I do, and I don't know that I do.
Do they know what you're going to be teaching?
I don't. I mean, I've put it on all the socials. I've got a Sumerian, no, Akkadian class coming up. When? The middle of January, I think we start. Yeah, that's it. I'm teaching Akkadian.
So that's a pretty big deal.
Sorry.
No, sorry. I was just... it's a good thing I'm saying. You're really impressive.
Oh, no, There's...
Okay, so
I always
Megan,
feel like there's a story that I should be telling, and I don't have a story. I'm just teaching Akkadian.
No, I mean, like, so, you know, last semester, Megan taught Sumerian, and she did, like, an introduction to the language and, like, how it works and some of the basics. It's not like, you know, it's not like this really intense class. It's just an intro to the language. Here's kind of how it works. So the people can sort of dip their toe into Sumerian and say, would I want to, you know, pursue this? Does it interest me? So there's not like this huge amount of pressure that a person has to go learn all Sumerian. It's just, the class is just sort of an intro to it. Get some broad exposure, learn some of the cool things about it, and then if you want to go further, you've got a really good introduction to it. Well, she's now doing the same thing with Akkadian, which is super cool. It's super cool.
It's definitely happening.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah. If people are interested, I can put the link. It's through a community college in Washington State. It's all on Zoom because obviously I am not in Washington State and it's a bit far to commute once a week to teach a two-hour-long class, sorry. But I can put the link in for anyone who is interested and wants to take a look and maybe sign up. Yeah.
And I will be going on tonight with Kip, getting back into Hebrew reading class. Hebrew.
Not really class, sorry, but Hebrew reading.
And I am, I was thinking about this yesterday on my drive in. I'm looking forward to, in the future, doing this sort of thing. I guess I should run this by you before I say it, but like, I think it'd be really cool after the kids are older, obviously, and we have, you know, this thing called time, to like every other week we sit down and do the same thing, you and I, with like Akkadian or Sumerian, you know, we just kind of...
I would like to do that. I don't spend enough time translating anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you have to translate these small children that are running around.
They scream louder than your average cuneiform tablet does as well, so it's quite difficult.
And it's just as hard to translate sometimes things like Iogurt pot.
No, no, I feel like that was pot. That was relatively clear. It's the wordless yelling, especially from Jasper, because he wants something. He doesn't have the words to ask for, so he just yells at you.
But I mean, like, they're getting...
What is it you need?
Like, he said candy necklace yesterday. Which, I mean, it took me a couple times hearing him say it to understand what it was. But, I mean, let's be honest, it was like 7 times with him pointing at it. But, yeah, they're super cute. Anyway.
They are very cute and amazing, and we love them.
Indeed.
Well, you're at work, and babies are stirring, so I need to go. I hope you all have enjoyed this. I'm sorry that there isn't much more from the desk of Megan. That should be changing a little bit in the next few weeks. So, I don't know how it's going to change.
I will say, if people are interested, and I'm sure that they are, keep your eye on Rationality Rules channel, because Kip, I think I mentioned this maybe last time, I'm not sure. Actually, I don't know. I'll just say it real quick. Kip Davis and I went on with Stephen to do a response to Paul Copan, who did a response to us doing a response to him.
But he was doing a response to you,
yeah.
Doing a response to him, doing a response. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. That wasn't funny.
It was. Sorry. But it was a 4-hour recording. So keep your eye on that channel, because I think that's going to produce several really good episodes. I was snarkier than I usually like.
Snarky Josh.
Yeah, it was at one point that... It's so terrible. I'm so terrible. But I don't really, it rubs me the wrong way sometimes when I've spent in grad school, I spent 10 years. 10 years formally learning Hebrew. 2 of those I taught it. To grad students. And not that I'm the world's greatest Hebrew expert, that's not the point. And then I'm sitting with a Dead Sea Scrolls expert, right, who spent just as much, if not more, time reading Hebrew and in you know, from different periods. And we're watching someone who is responding to something that I've said, something that I've spent years researching now, and having them sitting there and then hearing them say, well, in the Hebrew, what this means. And at one point he said, so in Hebrew, what this means. And I said, yes, Paul, please tell us what it means in the Hebrew. Which
he is an expert in Hebrew, though, Josh. I mean,
I'm sure that he's taken it. I'm not sure of that, but I suspect that he's taken it. I don't know. Not that I say all that, I'm not sure. But I don't know. It's just, I'm normally not like that. But because people watching don't know.
They don't. They believe when you speak with authority. And I think it's human nature. If someone speaks with enough authority and confidence, you assume they know what the hell they're talking about.
And if they're called doctor. Yeah. If they're called doctor and they've written a book about it, like, you would think, well, how do I know? I mean, I wouldn't know if scientist A and scientist B were saying something. You know, it's hard for me to know without really digging in. This guy is an evolutionary biologist and this guy is like a pharmacist or something. Like, I don't know. One's going to know about evolution more than the other. But if you don't like dig down into that, it's kind of, I'm probably just screwed all that up. But anyway, so look out for that. And also, and then I'll be quiet. Be on the lookout. Derek Lambert, MythVision, has been putting out really awesome like documentaries. I haven't watched them all, but one of them uses is influenced by, can we say, my chapter on the conquest in the Atheist Handbook Volume 2, which is really, you know, I'm excited that he's able to like use that and make this cool documentary. It's going to be about the conquest in the Book of Joshua, and I'm excited about it. Excited to see what he did with it. So, yes, to be on the lookout for that. It's cool.
Well, we are going to wrap up there.
Yeah. Sorry.
And we'll see you next week. We'll be on time next week. I completely forgot that Christmas was on a Monday this year, so I've been one day behind. Mm-hmm. Josh messaged me yesterday and said, oh, no, we were supposed to record the podcast this morning. And I was about to tell him, no, it's Tuesday. We do that on Wednesday. And then I realized, actually, no, it is Wednesday today. We should have done it. So apologies. We'll pay more attention next week.
And diddly doodly.
Well, have a good week, everyone, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.